Charlie Wilson started a war in Afghanistan with less horsepower than that. So I think that we can probably get some money to start really getting after these fish using the block and tackle method.
Welcome to the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Youngdyke, and we're recording this from the National Wildlife Federation annual meeting in St. Louis, Missouri, where all of our independent state affiliates get together to decide our policy as a national organization. One of the strongest affiliates that we have within our system is the Tennessee Wildlife Federation. And I'm privileged to have Mike Butler here, the executive director of the Tennessee Wildlife Federation, to talk about the issues that his part of the country is facing with Asian carp. But before we dive into that issue specifically, Mike, I'd just like to introduce folks to you and your organization. What would you say is the Tennessee Wildlife Federation? How does it operate, and how did you come to it?
Well, thanks for having me, Drew. I always love doing podcasts and radio, because especially podcasts, because you can carry them with you and you can listen to them multiple times. I'm a big podcast listener myself. The Tennessee Wildlife Federation has got a very similar history to a lot of other wildlife federations. We were started in the late 30s and reconstituted after World War II into the Tennessee Conservation League in 1946. We set forward trying to pass model legislation to create a professional wildlife management agency, which we did in 49. And then over the ensuing decades, we really played a major role in building out all the infrastructure around public natural resource management in Tennessee, whether it was around water, wildlife, forests, good land use practices. That included creating things like the Department of Conservation, the Division of Forestry, reconstituting the Tennessee Fish and Game Commission into the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency in the 70s. And there's a myriad of other important milestones, like restoring elk to Tennessee and other things like that we did. A lot of educational work. Our mission is to lead the conservation, sustainable management, and wise use of Tennessee's wildlife and natural resources. And for me, my father was a board member in the 80s of the then Tennessee Conservation League. We changed our name in 2004 to Tennessee Wildlife Federation. And once I did my undergraduate and graduate work in wildlife management, wildlife biology on waterfowl, I came back to Tennessee and eventually took a job with the Tennessee Conservation League, and then became its chief executive officer in 2002. And I've been doing that ever since. And we operate out of our headquarters in Nashville. We have a staff right now of 16. We're going to be adding a couple new people to do some outdoor education work with youth and parents on hunting and fishing. But, you know, that's a very loose path of how I got to where I'm at there. We really work in three primary areas. We work in conservation policy and advocacy. We work in youth engagement. And we work in stewardship, which is basically habitat restoration, primarily focused on wetland restoration, but also some other habitat types that are less than as abundant as they should be. How we came to carp is pretty easy. The Tennessee and Cumberland Rivers are connected to the Ohio. The Ohio is connected to the Mississippi. Carp left their aquaculture facilities in Arkansas in floods of 1970s and have multiplied and come upriver, and now they're into several different reservoirs in the Tennessee River system, and we're starting to see the negative impacts of that.
And I think I should remind people that actually my introduction to the Tennessee Wildlife Federation was my first annual meeting last year when you were named the NWF affiliate
of
the year. And since then, I've had much more of an introduction because I work on the Asian carp issue up in the Great Lakes. And I think oftentimes nationally, and you know, of course, in my region, we think it's all about keeping them out of the Great Lakes, but it's not. They are impacting areas like Barkley Lake, Kentucky Lake. Last year, I talked to Bill Cooksey, who's got a home on Barkley Lake, and he told me this year that it's even worse this year than it was last year. Said he's only caught 5 bass. I asked him if that was because he's just gotten worse as a fisherman. He goes, no, it's the carp. And he's a legit angler. What's going on with the carp in Tennessee, And what are the resources that your organization is marshaling to try to get rid of them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. What's been happening in Tennessee, we've known we've had carp for at least a decade. And the bell was rung 10 years ago, but the numbers were not so prevalent as to really scare people. And what's happened over that 10 years is we've seen the volume and frequency and expansion of the range of carp to the point where now people are starting to see them jump. They're getting into the lake on Kentucky Lake or Barkley, and they're looking at their side scan sonar, and they're seeing the entire bottom just scads and scads of carp. They're getting into coves and getting overrun with jumping silver carp. They're catching big head carp that are half the size of, you know, their boat, things like that. And we're also starting to see those carp advance. We're using eDNA testing, all the way through North Alabama. And the concern is, I mean, there is some riverfront development on Kentucky and Barkley, but East Tennessee has an absolute stunning amount of investment on the river. And we know that the river gets narrower and the flows get faster. So the conditions for spawning, while maybe not ideal every year at Kentucky Lake, where we don't think we've had a spawn in about 3 years,
okay,
I think you're looking at really perfect conditions on reservoirs like Nickajack and Chickamauga, which has one of the top three bass fisheries in the United States right now. So the threat to the eastern part of the state is enormous. The threat in West Tennessee is there. The tipping point challenge is this. The solutions that have been put forth by fisheries professional are pretty simple. I call it block and tackle.
Okay.
You set up boundaries at the locks, like sound band, the acoustic fish fence barriers that people are talking about, or electric barriers, or both. And then you incentivize commercial fishermen to use commercial fishing tackle to track the fish down, catch them, and remove them a ton, you know, by the tons. Those techniques seem to be working.
Okay.
Different versions. Some people call that a modified version of the unified method. The unified method's developed, you're well know aware of it. It's developed in China. The Chinese are incredibly efficient at catching these fish. Many people have gone from the United States over to China to learn that method. And in fact, from where we sit right here, we're not far from Creve Coeur Lake, which did an experiment last year. They caught 47,000 fish in one day using a modified unified method, where they drove all the fish into big nets. So the status is growing population in Tennessee, starting to see impacts to fisheries like crappie fisheries and native bass fisheries, starting to see impacts to home values on Kentucky Reservoir. It's following the same pattern it has on the Illinois River. So all of the nightmarish things are happening. The problem is that we have not been getting any resources to deal with this. And we have an opportunity to actually maybe get a little bit ahead if we jump on it right now. So what the Federation has done, in 2018, we finally, in late 2017, we started getting really concerned. And then we started hearing about this problem growing. And we started picking up on it in different corners. And finally we said, look, the public and the elected officials don't know enough about it. So we spent most of 2018 elevating the presence of the issue in the media. And it got really good coverage. And the beautiful thing about carp is that everybody can hate them. I mean, it's a great candidate to have. It's like litter. You know, there's not going to be a group that's going to come out and you're going to have to worry about having to debate about it because you need to get rid of them.
And this is probably a good time, if you want to know the exact impact that Asian carp have on fisheries, go back and listen to episode 1 with Bill Cooksey, listen to episode 10 with Mark Smith, and episode 11 with Taylor Riddenbush of Trout Unlimited. They just describe in quite a bit of detail the impact that they have on the forage fish, the competition for the algae. They basically just wipe out the base of the food chain.
The zooplankton chain is just wiped out.
Yep, they wipe out that base of the food chain. There's nothing left for forage fish. There's nothing left then for the sport fish that we target, in addition to the hazard that they create from the silver carp jumping out.
That's right. So here's the good news. We have markets for these fish. They already exist as human food, as fertilizer sources, as pet food, as some other innovative sources like bait for lobster, bait for king crab, things like that. The markets are not the problem. The problem is getting the fish from the river to the market efficiently, to where it doesn't break down, where the flesh of the fish doesn't break down. And the other challenge is you've got to have quite a few fish to meet the predictability that industry wants and businesses want. If they're going to invest $10 million in a processing facility, they want to know that they're going to get their money back and then some. We haven't had those volumes of fish. We've got enough fish that are carp that are causing problems, but we have to haul all of our fish to Paducah, Kentucky, to the facility there. So that creates a real challenge. You don't want to have so many fish that you justify putting in a processing facility because you want to catch them down.
Right, and you don't want to create an incentive for them to be released anywhere where they're not already.
That's right.
How do you balance that?
Well, we made it illegal in Tennessee to grow carp.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
You can't do it. I mean, we did it by rule. Our wildlife agency has the authority to declare a species a nuisance species like wild hogs. In a similar manner, and we just made it illegal. You cannot commercially propagate any Asian carp species. But to get back to, once we did the year of raising the issue in the media, we actually got some traction from some candidates in the last election cycle. They started hearing and seeing about it as well. Well, come about September, one of the things that became obvious to us is that all the different pockets of professionals working on this issue in the Southeast and abroad, really, they weren't talking with each other enough. They weren't communicating what's going on and how can we better work together. So we started a conference call, and the first one was very simple. It was myself, my counterparts in Alabama, Mississippi, and Kentucky, as well as the chiefs of fisheries from those four states. And we just shared information. Here's what's going on. Somebody heard about it, and they said, can I join that call? We went, absolutely. And then we started, well, who else needs to be on this call? And so at last count, we've got about 30 people from different places, and it includes staffers from Leader Mitch McConnell's office in the U.S. Senate, Rand Paul's office, Senator Lamar Alexander's office, Senator Richard Shelby's office, who's the chairman of Senate Interior Appropriations, or Senate Appropriations, including Congressman Kustoff, Congressman Comer, every alphabet soup federal and state agency you can think about, and even other people like the National Marine Manufacturers Association and NWF and others.
Yep, you've had Mark, my counterpart, and kind of my boss, Mark Smith, and
Mark
I both
been
joined that call as well.
And so it's become this thing, and in January I told our staff, I was like, look, okay, we've been talking about this enough. It's time to move to action. So the fisheries professionals in Tennessee and Kentucky, along with some other folks in MICRA, I won't even try to explain that acronym because
we'll provide a link in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah, the multi-interagency whatever. It's a bunch of fish professionals from about 23 different states. They came up with a plan that said, look, if you give us $11.6 million, we can start doing the block and tackle method on the Cumberland and Tennessee rivers. That would include northern Alabama, which the Tennessee River runs through. So we took that document and we went to Congressman Kustoff. But before we had gone to Kustoff with that document, we got Bill Dance, the fishing personality, in the boat with the congressman in the Wolf River Harbor to look at carp. And when that happened, a switch flipped. And the problem was really viewed through a different lens by the congressman. And he made it his number one priority for an appropriations request, and we were able to use our call with all that momentum and working with the congressman's staff to develop a appropriations request, dear colleague letter that had 15 different congressmen sign it from about four different states. Now we also have a parallel strategy going in the U.S. Senate, where we have support from Senator Shelby, who's the chairman of appropriations. We have support from Senator Alexander, who's the ranking Republican member in appropriations. And then most recently, a week ago, Leader McConnell said that this was his number one issue for Western Kentucky. So Charlie Wilson started a war in Afghanistan with less horsepower than that. So I think that we can probably get some money to start really getting after these fish using the block and tackle method.
And from our perspective, where I'm based in the Great Lakes, we focus so much on that. And I want folks in the Great Lakes to understand that if we want to keep them out of the Great Lakes, we're going to need support for those type of measures from outside the Great Lakes. And if we want that support, we need to make sure that we're jumping on this appropriations request and we're supporting that. And we're letting our congressmen, our senators in our region know that they have to support that funding request in your region. And that's the way that the National Wildlife Federation works best, I think, is where we bring these problems from multiple different states. We collaborate. We make them happen. We support those actions, not just in our parochial regions, but wherever they're happening. And Asian carp is not a Great Lakes issue. It's not just a Tennessee issue. Asian carp is a national issue from Louisiana up to Minnesota, from Tennessee all the way to North Dakota. They are impacting fisheries throughout the heartland. And so we have to do our best to get rid of them wherever they are. But it has to start somewhere. And it has to start right in Tennessee.
Well, and the fun thing about this, I mean, there's science that backs up what you're talking about in the sense that Asian carp are not a strong pioneering species. If you can catch them down in the area where they are, they tend to like to occupy the habitat until they completely occupy it. Then they overflow and start moving into other habitats. So a big part of the strategy is just using commercial fishing to really work on them hard. And if you can keep the population even subdued in one area, you're protecting them from moving into other areas as much. Now, you take that to scale up and down the entire Mississippi River drainage, we actually have a chance. It'll take probably a decade to make a real dent. But we're seeing examples where you can catch fish, like on the Ohio and some areas where they've done work, or on the Illinois. I read a study recently where they had gone in and done some blocks, and they went in and fished it down, and they saw an improvement in zooplankton production and gizzard shad recruitment, which is an indication that they were reversing the damage done by the carp. Now, the next step is one of the things that Mark and I have talked about at this meeting, and that is to form a national coalition to go after this. And we're in conversations with several national organizations, and the groundwork seems to be laid for us to be able to go and do that. It'll start with teaming up state organizations, and then that'll be vertically integrated all the way to national organizations being partnered. That whole purpose of that strategy is to keep informing and letting elected officials know you can't let up. We've got to have this help, or else we're going to watch billions and billions of economic impact dollars leave our rural parts of our states around our waters, our public waters. Outdoor recreation on our lakes will cease to exist as we know it if we don't.
And if people want to support this work and the other great work that the Tennessee Wildlife Federation does, you have a really extensive website, a great communication suite with a ton of information. We'll share that on the NWF Outdoors social media channels as well. But where can people go directly to support the Tennessee Wildlife Federation and contact their senators, their congressmen to support this effort?
Well, go to our website. It's tnwf.org. TN for Tennessee, WF for Wildlife Federation.org. And there's a donate button there. There's a where we do our work area where you can find our policy page. And that policy page, we have a way for you to sign up and get updates on a regular basis. Pretty straightforward.
Great. We'll link that in the show notes as well. Mike, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining the NWF Outdoors podcast, and thanks for being part of the Federation.
I look forward to coming back.
Thank you.
Gotta have this help, or else we're gonna watch billions and billions of economic impact dollars leave our rural parts of our states around our waters, our public waters. Outdoor recreation on our lakes will cease to exist as we know it if we don't.
And if people want to support this work and the other great work that the Tennessee Wildlife Federation does, you have a really extensive website, a great communication suite with a ton of information. We'll share that on the NWF Outdoors social media channels as well. But where can people go directly to support the Tennessee Wildlife Federation and contact their senators, their congressmen to support this effort?
Well, go to our website. It's tnwf.org. TN for Tennessee, WF for Wildlife Federation.org. And there's a donate button there. There's a where we do our work area where you can find our policy
page and that policy page, we have a way for you to sign up and get updates on a regular basis. Pretty straightforward.
Great. We'll link that in the show notes as well. Mike, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining the NWF Outdoors podcast, and thanks for being part of the Federation.
I look forward to coming back.
Thank you.